Les conférences du Collège de France.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce Tony Hunter from the Salk Institute for his fourth and last lecture today on pancreatic cancer. Tony, thank you for being here, and the floor is yours.
Thanks, you. Well, it's down to my last lecture, and this time I really won't be spending much time talking about post-translational modifications except in passing. But I thought I would start this lecture, as I've started every other lecture, with my little bit of personal life history. Here I am as a new graduate student in 1965. Some evidence I actually did experiments, and then once I got my PhD in 1969, I started to grow my hair out. And in 1971, I went to the Salk Institute to do a postdoctoral study with Walter Eckhart on polyomavirus. And after 2 years, I came back, and there had been a dramatic transition. I grew my beard. The story is that I last shaved when I walked down into the Grand Canyon to join a rafting trip in July of 1972. So my beard turned 50 a couple of years ago now. I looked for a job in England but failed to find one, but luckily they'd offered me a position at the Salk Institute, and I came back in 1975, and that's where I have been ever since. And I thought I'd just continue for one more slide on the beard theme. These are two images made by former postdocs of mine, Randy Poon, who worked on the cell cycle in my lab, a very talented oil artist, actually, and this is a cartoon by Dave Middlemas. You probably can't read this necessarily, but I can phosphorylate. Therefore, what does it say? Therefore, I am. I'm apologist to Descartes here. This is actually phosphotyrosine here in the red, in case you're wondering what it is. And then one final beard picture. I went to the Galapagos a couple of years ago now, and this is the Darwin Museum on the Galapagos. Darwin was at my college in Cambridge, and so this is somehow appropriate that there I am standing next to his mannequin here. I'm trying to get some inspiration. Anyway, as I said, I won't really be talking about post-translational modifications, but for the last three lectures, I've been talking about phosphorylation of serine, threonine, and tyrosine, and histidine, and also extensively about ubiquitination of lysine. Now, the point in showing this is that there are other post-translational modifications out there waiting to be discovered. And so even though there are over 400 known, certainly new ones could be discovered, and there would be plenty to do to understand how they work. But instead, what I want to do today is talk about our work on pancreatic cancer, which began about almost 15 years ago now, when I joined a Stand Up to Cancer pancreatic dream team to study pancreatic cancer. And the reason for studying, I mean, I've been studying cancer my whole career, but not really at a translational level. But the reason for studying pancreatic cancer is that it has a grim prognosis. It's almost always diagnosed too late. You can see here over 50% are diagnosed when the cancer has already metastasized. And it's the third leading cause of cancer-related death at the moment, even though it's only the 10th most common cancer. And this is anticipated to increase to the second most caused reason for cancer death unless a better therapy can be developed. Currently, the one-year survival is only 20% of patients, and five-year survival is a miserable 11%. Now, we know quite a lot about the genetics of pancreatic cancer. It undergoes a series of both morphological and genetic changes over years, probably many years. The initiating mutation is thought to be an activating mutation of the KRAS oncoprotein. And then this is followed by loss of function mutations in P16ARF, CDK2N2A, the CDK inhibitor, and the P53 and SMAD4 tumor suppressor proteins. And you can see that as additional mutations are acquired, the morphology There's an asynodactyl metaplastic transition through a stage of pancreatic cancer in situ. And then finally, beyond panin-3, cells begin to leave the primary tumor and invade into the local tissue, where they can be disseminated throughout the body by intravasation into the bloodstream, and then finally extravasation to form a metastasis, in this case, most commonly in the liver. Now, I should remind you then that solid tumors are a community of cells. They're like a tissue, if you want, which contains not only the tumor cells, but many types of stromal cells, immune cells, endothelial cells, the blood vessels that supply the oxygen and nutrients to the tissue. And it's becoming realized then that these cells, these different types of cells, talk to one another to maintain this tumor tissue, both in the primary tumor and in subsequent metastatic tumors. And we started working on a specialized cell type in the pancreas called the pancreatic stellate cell because of their star shape. They're quiescent cells resident in the normal pancreas. So you can see they may be up to 4% of all pancreatic cells. And they're sort of professional surveillors of the tissue. They are looking for damage, inflammatory signals, and cancer. And in response to such signals, these stellate cells, or PSCs, transform into a myofibroblast-like cell, sometimes called a MICAF, or myofibroblastic cancer-associated fibroblast, which then begins to secrete matrix, mostly collagen-based matrix, but a whole range of cytokines, into the local environment around the incipient tumor. So there's been a lot of interest in these cells, which give rise to one class of cancer-associated fibroblast. So the question is, why is pancreatic cancer so hard to treat? Well, it's a very stromal tumor. This is sometimes called a desmoplastic response. And probably the tumor cells are only 10% of the mass of the actual tumor tissue. The tumor, a nest of tumor cells, and is surrounded by this dense matrix contributed by the cancer-associated fibroblasts. And one consequence is that the key immune cells, the CD8-positive T cells, are excluded from the tumor tissue. And this is really a wound-healing response that would occur, say, for instance, in response to pancreatitis. And it's often been said that cancer is the wound that never heals. So this is really a wound response. It's walling off the tumor. And if you eliminate these surrounding CAFs genetically, the tumor gets much more aggressive. It's been shown in mouse models. So they are serving a purpose, but they also make it difficult to deliver therapeutic agents, antibodies and small molecule drugs, to the tumor cells. So in a little more detail then, we have tumor cells in the middle, often forming a lumen. There are infiltrating immune cells, macrophages, neutrophils, and myeloid-derived suppressor cells. But as I said, the cytotoxic T cells are excluded. And these tumors are poorly vascularized here. So we want to understand the crosstalk between the different cells in the pancreatic tumor environment. And particularly, we'd like to know what factors are secreted by the cancer-associated fibroblasts and the immune cells in the tumor tissue that lead, amongst other things, to exclusion of T cells and the generation of an immunosuppressive microenvironment. And sadly, it's true that pancreatic tumors almost never respond to checkpoint antibody therapy. So we set out to try and identify specifically soluble protein factors that were generated by the cancer-associated fibroblasts in pancreatic cancer that would act on the tumor cells and potentially other cells in the microenvironment to promote tumorigenesis. We already knew there are factors made by the tumor cells, such as TGF-beta and PDGF, that act on the stellate cells to promote their transition into myofibroblasts. And the story I'm going to tell you right in the beginning part of my talk is our discovery that leukemia inhibitory factor that I'll be calling LIF plays a driver role, at least in mouse pancreatic cancer models. So to study what secreted proteins might be important, Yuxi, a postdoc in my lab, and his high school classmate, Ruijun Tian, who at the time was a postdoc in Tony Paulson's lab, set out to identify this or characterize the secretomes of a pancreatic, a human pancreatic tumor cell line, MIA-PaCa-2, and CAFs, culturing these cells in serum-free medium, and then collecting all the proteins and carrying out mass spec analysis in duplicate. So you can see there were 2,400 proteins in the MIA-PaCa-2 secretome, around 1,400 proteins in the CAF secretome, and then looked for proteins unique to either one or the other secretome. There are around 400 that were unique to the secretome of the tumor cells, around 170 unique to the fibroblastic cells. And then we focused on proteins that we thought would serve as signals, like growth factors, cytokines, chemokines. But I should point out that many of the unique proteins secreted by the CAFs are proteins involved in extracellular matrix functions. But really, we focused then on factors unique to the myofibroblasts, and in particular, we focused on LIF. But you can see, for instance, that PDGF secreted by the tumor cells, which we know acts on the fibroblasts, and TGF-beta secreted by both cells, which also acts on the fibroblasts. Now, why do we focus on CAF? Well, like all cytokines, like IL-6, of which it's a family member, it induces STAT3 signaling, which we knew was elevated in pancreatic cancer and is fairly easy to study immunohistochemically. But more importantly, LIF is a stem cell factor. It's well known as a factor that can maintain pluripotency in embryonic stem cells. And this seemed like a property that would be useful to a tumor. And in its normal function, it creates an immunosuppressive microenvironment. So what we showed was then that the conditioned medium from the CAFs was able to stimulate phosphorylation of STAT3 in the tumor cells in culture. And we showed that the conditioned medium elicits binding of STAT3 to the LIF receptor and its co-receptor, and that a neutralizing anti-LIF monoclonal antibody can block most of the STAT3 phosphotyrosine 705 signal induced by the conditioned medium. And just to show you that piece of data, here we have the this pack, I think it's KP4 cells, another pancreatic tumor cell line, stimulated either with LIF or conditioned medium or nothing, and you see a strong signal here. And now if you include a neutralizing anti-LIF antibody in the conditioned medium or in the medium added with LIF, you can see essentially all of the signal goes away. So this suggested to us that at least one of the factors in the conditioned medium that was activating STAT signaling was LIF. Now, it turns out we were somewhat fortunate here because the two cell lines we'd studied, pancreatic cancer cell lines we'd studied for their secretomes, MIA-PaCa-2 and PANC-1, turn out to have expressed very low levels of endogenous LIF. But there certainly are other pancreatic cancer cell lines like ASPC1 and CAPN1, which have rather high levels of LIF, and I'll come back to that in a minute. you can see that the stellate cells, the CAFs, have high levels of LIP. So in addition to these properties I've just told you about, if you look at the TCGA catalog of RNA expression in human tumor types, the 20 human tumor types that they survey, pancreatic cancer, or known as PAAD here, has much the highest level of LIF of all the human tumors. This is at the RNA level now, particularly compared to the normal pancreas, which has very low levels. And another thing that we noted was that high LIF RNA expression from early tumors, these are tumors that probably had not metastasized, correlates with poor early stage prognosis. And so you can see with LIF RNA high, very poor prognosis compared to LIF RNA low. So what is LIF known for? Well, it got its name in the late 1980s through its ability to inhibit the differentiation of M1 leukemia cells, suggesting it has a role somehow in the immune system in regulating differentiation. But it's probably not the best name that could have been chosen, but this is the name we're stuck with. And it's a highly pleiotropic cytokine that does many things to many cells. And it's expressed by many types of cell in the body, including stem cells themselves, hepatocytes, myoblasts, etc., including myeloid cells, as I'll show you towards the end. Now, surprisingly, LIF knockout mice are viable, both males and females. And the main phenotype they show are fertility defects. So the female LIF knockout mice produce fertile eggs that they can't implant, because LIF, expressed by the endometrial cells, is needed for blastocyst implantation. It actually induces an invasive phenotype in the embryo, or the blastocyst, to penetrate the wall. And it also creates an immunosuppressive microenvironment to prevent attack of the mother's immune system on the embryo. The LIF knockout males are viable but infertile. They don't produce sperm. As I said, LIF promotes self-renewal and pluripotency of many stem cell types. Now, the LIF receptor is a little more complicated. Not only is it a co-receptor, so it binds LIF but needs a co-receptor to signal, which it does largely through JAK-STAT and the ERK MAP kinase cascades. But the LIF knockout mice die perinatally, so it is an essential gene. But you can get, there are conditional LIF knockout mice, which we used, in fact. So as I said, LIF is part of a heterodimeric receptor complex, but it's the receptor not only for LIF, but also several other cytokines, CNTF, CT1, CLC, and auristatin M, which I'll talk about at the very end, which also has a separate receptor, the OSMR. So all of these cytokines signal through the LIF receptor complex and activate JAK-STAT signaling. And what we don't really understand, I think this is true for many cytokines, is how different cytokines can use the same receptor system and yet generate a different signal in the cell. Something I think we need to think about more. And if one wants to try and antagonize LIF-LIF receptor signaling, targeting the LIF receptor might come with liabilities, because it might be blocking signals through the other cytokines that can recognize it. So this is what the family looks like. These are all the ones in plus LIF that use the LIF receptor itself. But each of these receptors has a unique ligand binding subunit, like IL-6R and IL-11R, that heterodimerizes with GP130. And the LIF receptor, but all of them really do the same thing. They activate JAK-STAT signaling here by binding the JAK kinases, phosphorylating the receptor to induce STAT binding through its SH2 domain and then dimerization of the phospho-STAT. And LIF signaling to the MAP kinase pathway and the PI3 kinase pathway can be transduced through SHP2 binding. It's interesting that the LIF receptor has a much longer tail with several tyrosines in it, and we wonder whether that's important for what it does in the cell. So with this evidence in hand, then, we decided to test whether LIF was playing a role in pancreatic cancer. And for this purpose, we used the mouse model that Dave Tuberson's lab developed in 2003, with Hingorani as the first author. And we chose to use this version of the model in which a lock-stop LOX G12D oncogenic allele of KRAS can be activated by Cre excision of the lock-stop LOX, and where both alleles of TP53 are FLOX, so that when Cre is expressed in the pancreatic and lager, KRAS G12D expression is activated and P53 is deleted. These mice develop a very fulminant pancreatic cancer. It's already evident when the mice are born that there is something happening in the pancreas. And their half time of survival is 50 days after birth. So a very aggressive disease. But we wanted to see if neutralizing LIF could improve survival of these mice. Now, the first thing we did then was to look to see where LIF and LIF receptor are expressed, both in the normal mouse pancreas and in the tumors. So we've used RNAscope, two-color RNA in situ hybridization. So if you just focus really on the bottom panels, this is the signal for LIF receptor, for LIF itself. And you can see that most of this LIF signal is in cells surrounding the blue keratin 19 positive tumor cells, although there are LIF positive tumor cells, consistent with what's been found in cell lines. The LIF receptor, in contrast, is primarily expressed in the tumor cells and not in the blue periostin positive cells surrounding the tumor cells. So that fits with our model then, that LIF is being made by stromal cells and acting on the tumor cells which have LIF receptor. So this is the model we were pursuing then, that the stellate cells, in this case the myofibroblasts, are making LIF that's acting on the tumor cells, which may also make autocrine LIF. And then the tumor cells make other factors that act on the stellate cells to convert them into myofibroblasts. Now, importantly, for what we wanted to do ultimately, the same pattern of LIF expression is seen in human pancreatic tumor samples. So this is a tumor sample, again, using RNAscope two-color in situ hybridization for keratin 19, which marks the tumor cells and LIF. And you can see that there is some LIF signal in the tumor cells, here in the blow-up as well, but the most of the LIF signal is coming from the surrounding stromal cells. So with that information, we went ahead and set up a preclinical test in the KPC mouse model that I described to you, where we treated the mice with 25 mg per kg three times a week with this neutralizing anti-LIF antibody, D25, which was actually made by Genentech, as you can see, a long time ago now, for another purpose altogether, and they put it into the public domain. So it's available. And the control was a normal isotype matched IgG. So here you can see in the control strong nuclear staining of cells, but the tumor cells and actually some surrounding cells, for phospho-STAT3. In the mice treated with LIF antibody, you can see much of the nuclear STAT signal has gone away, consistent with LIF driving some of the STAT3, phospho-STAT3 signal, and that one can neutralize it with this antibody. So that led us then to do this sort of preclinical treatment model where we treated the mice with the LIF monoclonal antibody, 25 mg per kg, starting treatment at 32 days of age, and at the same time included with or without gemcitabine, which was a standard of care nucleoside analog therapy for pancreatic cancer. It really doesn't work very well, but we included it as what you might decide to do when you're treating a human cancer patient. And what we found was that, here's the control again, the mice dying around 50 days. If we just use the LIF antibody, we get a modest extension, but that if we include in the combination of gemcitabine and anti-LIF antibody, we get quite a healthy increase in survival. I agree it's not dramatic, but it is an increase in a model that's difficult to treat. So that's what we concluded then, that the LIF antibody can slow tumor progression and potentially enhance the response to gemcitabine. We carried out a second type of preclinical treatment regimen in which we pre-treated the mice for 1 week with a combination of paclitaxel, a tubulin drug, gemcitabine and cisplatin, a DNA drug, which is what is commonly used in patients. And then followed that with the gemcitabine anti-LIF antibody treatment protocol. And now you can see that particularly with the gemcitabine plus anti-LIF antibody, we get a quite strong a doubling in the increase in survival. So that's consistent then with the earlier slide I showed you and suggests that maybe LIF blockade could be of therapeutic benefit. Now, we wanted to be certain that this was really dependent on the LIF receptor, and so we used the LIF receptor knockout mice, which we bred into the KPC background. And now you can see that just using gemcitabine alone, when both alleles of the LIF receptor are knocked out locally in the pancreas, in the tumor cells, you again get this increase in survival. We've not done the experiment, I must admit, with the conditional LIF knockout because there was no LIF blocked allele available then. There is, in fact, now. So this really recapitulates the conclusion we had with the antibody. Now, just a couple more things we did in terms of analyzing what effect the antibody had on tumor progression. We carried out pathological measurements and showed that gemcitabine plus the antibody resulted in an increase in areas of the tumors as gauged by three independent pathologists that were moderately differentiated, suggesting that one thing that LIF does is potentially to slow dedifferentiation. We found that there were fewer cells, tumor cells, EpCAM positive tumor cells that had CD133 or ALDH stem cell markers, quite a significant decrease. And perhaps more importantly, that EpCAM positive cells were severely deficient in their ability to form spheroids in culture or to form flank tumors when reintroduced into mice, suggesting that one thing that LIF antagonism is doing is to reduce the number of stem-like cells in the tumor. We also showed from RNA sequence analysis that LIF blockade suppresses EMT expression. Remember, EMT is a conversion to a fibroblastic-like cell, a mesenchymal cell, which allows the cell to become invasive. And interestingly, it also increases the expression of these two transporter proteins, which transport gemcitabine into the cell tumor cells, which may be the reason why the synergy between the two drugs. Now, if we look at a progression, we find that the levels of LIF rise significantly. Note this is a logarithmic scale here, rise significantly during the course of 7 weeks in the mice. And by week five, we can actually begin to detect circulating LIF in the serum of these mice, which I'll get back to in just a second. This was done by Illuminex ELISA assay. So the next step was then to ask whether there are similar changes in LIF expression in human pancreatic cancer. And so we collaborated with several groups who treated pancreatic cancer patients and who did either biopsies or autopsies on pancreatic cancer patients to analyze for levels of LIF in tumor samples compared to chronic pancreatitis samples and normal pancreas. And you can see that the majority of pancreatic cancer samples had high levels of LIF, which were actually confirmed independently by using PRM mass spec analysis targeting LIF done by Ridge and Tian. Now, using a higher sensitivity digital ELISA, the Quanterix system, we could detect high levels of LIF. Again, this is now a log scale, high levels of LIF in many pancreatic cancer patients. But I must admit, these are not matched samples, so they're different patients. So this suggested maybe LIF could be used as a diagnostic or even a prognostic marker. So as was the case in mice, you can see that if you look now at these samples where pathology had indicated they were either well, moderately, or poorly differentiated, you can see the poorly differentiated tumors have high levels of LIF, and there is a trend here, not a very strong trend, but there is a trend. In addition, because we were part of this Stand Up to Cancer Dream Team who were treating pancreatic cancer patients, we collaborated with Erkut Borazantsev and Dan Van Hoff at Honor Health in Phoenix, where they pre-treated patients with Abraxane, which is the NAB paclitaxel tubulin drug, gemcitabine, cisplatin, paracalcitol, and in this case, an anti-PD-L1 checkpoint antibody for 2 weeks, and then analyzed whether there was an objective response, or whether there was progression. And you can see there were falls in LIF levels in the majority of patients in the serum. And in fact, LIF scores better in this rhesus grade ROC analysis than CA19-9 in predicting the response to therapy. So in the long term, it might be possible to use LIF in combination with CA19-9, which is the conventional marker for pancreatic cancer, serum marker for pancreatic cancer. So this sort of summarizes what we'd found in our studies, which were published in 2019. So LIF plays a driver role, at least in the mouse model of pancreatic cancer. LIF levels are high, not only in the mouse model, but also in human pancreatic cancer. We know LIF acts on the tumor cells, but it may well act on other cell types in the cancer, and I'll get back to that in a minute. And LIF could serve as a biomarker. So the question is then, can LIF be used therapeutically, or can it be targeted therapeutically in human pancreatic cancer? And Northern Biologics in Toronto, a small biotech company, developed, for other reasons actually, an anti-LIF neutralizing, humanized anti-LIF neutralizing monoclonal antibody, and together with Celgene initiated a phase 1 trial in highly refractory cancer patients, and they added in 9 pancreatic cancer patients because of our results. And it was completed successfully. There was no maximum tolerated dose reached at 1,500 mg per kg was the 1500 mg was the highest dose that they used. The results have been published, and there were some progression-free survival responses, but nothing significant. So what do we know about LIF and LIFR in cancer in general? So it's been implicated in several types of cancer: non-small cell lung cancer, breast cancer, colorectal cancer. Expression of LIF and LIFR is upregulated in breast cancer, although there is one report suggesting LIF might be a breast cancer metastasis suppressor. Joanne Seyon's group showed that now about 12 years ago, so showed that TGF-beta increases cell renewal of glioma-initiating cells by induction of LIF, particularly in GBM. And then they've gone on to show that in mouse xenograft models of with glioblastoma cells and ovarian cancer cells, that LIF induces the recruitment of macrophages and acts on macrophages in the tumors to repress expression of CXCL9, a chemokine that normally mediates the recruitment of CD8 T cells into the tumor. And so this is one mechanism through which LIF is playing a role in immunosuppression. In lung cancer, Papagiannakopoulos, I could pronounce it, recently reported that autocrine LIF is signaling is important in this genetic subtype of non-small cell lung cancer, LKB mutant lung cancer, and that blocking LIF in a mouse model increases the number of intratumoral CD4 and CD8 T cells. Interestingly, in pancreatic cancer, Tomasini's group showed that LIF actually drives neural remodeling via LIF on peripheral nerves. And this is important because actually often the first symptom of pancreatic cancer is back pain, and that's because presumably LIF is now recruiting neurons into the somatosensory neurons into the tumor, which is then ultimately leading to pain. Tuvison's group has an interesting story that IL-1 can induce LIF expression and JAK-STAT signaling to generate another class of CAFs, inflammatory CAFs. And it was Frank McCormick's group who, around the same time as our paper, showed that LIF expression is induced in some pancreatic tumor cell lines by oncogenic KRAS. So there are multiple ways to induce LIF and for it to act in the tumors. And just to keep you awake, this is what you have to do to raise funds for pancreatic cancer research. This was a fundraising walk, obviously. So I've been talking about one way to neutralize LIF in cancer, LIFR in cancer, using receptor, rather anti-LIF antibodies, but you could also target the LIF receptor. And this has been attempted, or is being attempted, by a couple of companies I know about. So whether this will have unwanted side effects, I think, is unclear. One could also engineer a LIF receptor-based LIF trap protein, like the TNF-alpha trap protein, Remicade, that's used in as a treatment for inflammation. I want to tell you this story in a single slide because the work was carried out by our older son, Sean, when he was a graduate student at Stanford. Sean was in Jennifer Cochran's lab, a protein engineering lab. And so what Sean did was to take these three domains of the LIF receptor and carry out multiple rounds of random mutagenesis and surface display on yeast to generate what he called an ELIFR, engineered LIFR, with an improved affinity for human LIF. And he got a protein with about a 30-fold increase in affinity for LIF, and he fused this to a human FC to generate ELIFR FC. And we helped him do the experiments to test whether this new LIF trap would work in a tumor model. And in this case, these are nude mice bearing KP4 human pancreatic cancer cell xenografts treated either with PBS in this case or the ELIF-RFC. And you can see that the ELIF-RFC significantly slows the growth of these tumors at 10 mgs per kg. And I should say these are tumor cells that make autocrine LIF. There is at least one drug, EC359, which is claimed to block the interaction of LIF and LIF receptor. And I know of other companies trying to make such molecules, and this is in clinical trials, in fact not for pancreatic cancer though. And then finally, another way that one might be able to abrogate LIF expression would be to use epigenetic drugs like HDAC inhibitors or BET domain inhibitors, because it turns out that LIF is the most prominent super enhancer in pancreatic cancer, human pancreatic cancer tissue. So super enhancers are defined by high levels of H3K27AC, acetyl lysine 27. And if we look at the top 10 enhancers in this list, it's LIF and OSM, which I'll talk about in a minute. So clearly LIF is highly turned on in pancreatic cancer through this super enhancer, and presumably that involves histone acetylation. So in collaboration with Ron Evans's lab, which, and this was mostly done in Ron Evans's lab, particularly by Gao Yang Liang, a postdoc in the lab, they have tested entinostat, a class 1 HDAC inhibitor, so it inhibits HDAC 1, 2, and 3. And again, in the KPC model, they tested entinostat, gemcitabine, or a combination of entinostat and gemcitabine, and it's the combination, again, that seems to give you the strongest increase in survival. And they also found that the entinostat treatment led to an increase in differentiation score in these tumors. And what Gao Yang was able to show was that if one takes human calves, treats them with entinostat, and then acquires the conditioned medium, that the conditioned medium from the entinostat-treated cells shows a significant decrease in the ability of the conditioned medium to induce STAT3 phosphorylation. And entinostat treatment of these cells significantly reduces LIF RNA expression and LIF secreted LIF protein expression. So clearly, histone acetylation, particularly reversible histone acetylation, is important for LIF expression. Importantly, what they found was that in mice treated with entinostat, there was a significant increase in the infiltration of CD8 positive T cells. You can see a strong increase here, suggesting that a combination of an HDAC inhibitor with a chemotherapeutic drug could be therapeutically beneficial. So I've talked about ways that we can prevent LIF function in pancreatic cancer. But what we really like to do is to be able to use neutralization antagonism of LIF to improve the immune response. Now, I've told you that Northern Biologics developed a humanized neutralizing LIF antibody, and their program was acquired by AstraZeneca, and it's now called AZD0171. And they have just finished a phase 2 trial in which AZD0171 was combined with durvalumab, and their anti-PD-L1 antibody, gemcitabine and nab-paclitaxel, in advanced pancreatic cancer, and this is going to be unblinded sometime this year. So it will be very interesting to see what the outcome is. They have just opened another trial with AZD0171 in non-small cell lung cancer as a neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapy, so early resectable lung cancer, probably based on Thales Papagiannopoulos' new data. So what about LIFR and the immune system? I don't want to take you through this, but obviously the original discovery that it affected myeloid cell differentiation state was suggestive. LIF is known to increase the level of Tregs. And LIF-positive tumors have high levels of tumor-resident macrophages and myeloid-derived suppressor cells. And I already told you about this CXCL9 story. So our own work using single-cell RNA-seq on CD45, so immune cells from KPC pancreatic tumors, showed that LIF is very highly expressed by one subtype of myeloid cells here, which are M1-like pro-inflammatory macrophages. They also express IL-6. And OSM. Now, we've not followed up on IL-6, largely because our mass spec data didn't show very high levels of IL-6 in human pancreatic cancer, although it is there, so one shouldn't rule it out. But it's interesting that all three of these family members are highly expressed. And in terms of LIF receptor, many of these myeloid cells also, myeloid lineage cells also have LIF receptor. So there's one piece of evidence, unpublished data from Ron Evans's lab, which we helped with as well, particularly work of Wenbin Li, who's been trying to test whether LIF antagonism will improve T cell killing of pancreatic tumor cells. And the way that they've done this is to generate or acquire PDAC tumor cells, mouse tumor cells, expressing GP33, which is a glycoprotein from LCMV virus, which is very immunogenic, and are killed P14 CD8 T cells, mouse T cells, are activated with this GP33 peptide. And you can see that as you increase the T cell to tumor cell ratio, you get very strong killing here at a 4-to-1 ratio. So what they found is that if you isolate tumor interstitial fluid by squeezing an orthotopic pancreatic cancer, so you get liquid out of it, and then add TIFF to this killing assay with an 8-to-1 or 6-to-1 ratio here, TIFF totally abolishes T cell killing. But if you I'm getting this confused now. But I think that's the most important finding here. So the question is one of the factors in TIFF, which is causing this killing, blockade of killing, LIF? And the answer appears to be yes, because if you use the antibody neutralization to pre-treat TIFF and add anti-LIF at the same time, you can see that the ability of the T cells to kill is now significantly increased. And so one possibility is that LIF is actually directly somehow antagonizing the ability of CD8 T cells to kill pancreatic tumor cells. And so this is obviously something that they're following up on now. Whoops. So finally then, in the last 5 minutes or so, we're interested in finding other possible secreted ligand receptor signaling loops that can be targeted therapeutically in pancreatic cancer. And we've been collaborating with Ruijun Tian again, who's now at SUSTech in Shenzhen, who is a mass spectrometry expert, to carry out mass spec analysis on human pancreatic tissue samples, and in particular to enrich for proteins that are glycosylated. And he's developed a spin tip method that can analyze just a few hundred cells isolated by laser capture microdissection. But he's also carried out phosphotyrosine proteomics on pancreatic cancer cells treated with, pancreatic cancer cell conditioned medium used to treat calves and looked at the phosphotyrosine signal. So here are the tumor cells, conditioned medium acting on the stellate cells. And two of the strongest signals that one gets in this case are the phosphorylated PDGF receptor, tyrosine 849, and the tyrosine 542 in SHP2, which is a tyrosine phosphatase that is needed for many receptor tyrosine kinase signaling pathways. And using inhibitors of either you can see that LIF expression is strongly increased by treatment with PDGF-BB. And he's used a panel of inhibitors for this type of mass spec analysis in cells treated with PDGF-BB. And the PDGF receptor inhibitor decreases secreted LIF expression, as does an inhibitor of SHP2 and JAK1. And finally, he's used siRNA treatment to downregulate FOS, which is commonly downstream of this pathway, which is, as you can see, blocked by a MEK inhibitor and ERK inhibitor here. And finds that knockdown of FOS also leads to decreased expression of LIF. And so the model is then that one of the pathways in the cancer-associated fibroblast that is activated to produce LIF is via PDGF secreted by the tumor cells that results in ERK pathway-dependent CFOS activation of LIF expression. But I should say then that LIF expression can be driven in many ways, probably because the super enhancer contains many different response elements, and the others have reported STAT3 itself can drive LIF expression. CREB1, the cyclic AMP pathway transcription factor driven by CRTC2 coactivator, and FOXM1 and SRF. And so it's likely then that there are many ways to activate LIF expression in calves and in other cells, such as myeloid cells, that need to be worked out, I think, using single-cell spatial transcriptomics and proteomics. So one can really develop then better targeted therapies. So the question is, are there other combinations, factor combinations, that could be targeted? And Uyena Gao and Ruijian have carried out a global analysis of secreted glycoproteins and receptors, glycosylated receptors, in about 30 human pancreatic tumor samples of different stages of normal pancreas and pancreatitis samples. And they've identified over 1,200 secreted glycoproteins and nearly 3,000 membrane glycoproteins. And 90% of the receptors have a paired ligand expressed in the tissue. For instance, GAS6 produced by the calves, and AXL receptor tyrosine kinase produced on the tumor cells. So there clearly are going to be other secreted ligand receptor loops that can be targeted. And We've chosen to investigate OSM and OSM receptor because of the data I showed you earlier, and because we already know a lot about cytokine signaling pathways. So oxcitin AME is also quite highly expressed in pancreatic cancer, again, using the same TCGA data set. And it's significantly higher than in normal pancreas, the black there, so that's encouraging. And as I've already shown you, the myeloid cells express very high levels of oxcitin AME. So oxcitin AME uses both the LIFT receptor, as I told you, and also its own dedicated receptor. And so one has to sort out the different functions of these two receptor systems. But Yuan Shi in the lab has begun to study oxcitin AME in human pancreatic tumors using multiplex immunostaining. And what interestingly, if you look at the OSM signal, which is the red signal here, and this is a tumor nest here, you can see that these tumor cells have high levels of oxcitin AME receptor, whereas there are other tumor nests which seem to have very low levels, and that's something we need to try and work out why that should be. But interestingly, he's knocked out oxcitin AME receptor in the KP4 tumor cells and shown that this strongly reduces proliferation and migration, and that oxcitin AME receptor re-expression now restores the growth and the migration of these cells. So oxcitin AME, this is in the oxcitin AME receptor, in the absence of any added oxcitin AME, is clearly playing some interesting role in these tumor cells, and we have similar data for other pancreatic tumor cell lines. And I'll finish with data I showed last time in lecture 3, which was my phosphohistidine lecture, because what I showed you was that there are high levels of phosphohistidine in this ATP citrate lyase protein, which has a phosphohistidine enzyme intermediate that is needed for expression of acetyl-CoA. And what Natalie Latala in the lab had shown was that there are high levels of phosphohistidine in red in the tumor, green tumor cells here, but a lot of the phosphohistidine turns out to be in stromal cells. And what she showed was that this was mostly in the CD45 cells. And her work and the work of a new postdoc, Aubrey Michi, has shown that this is largely present in the myeloid-derived suppressor cells. So hopefully, by understanding the role of ACLY, we may be able to devise a therapy that would boost the immune response to pancreatic cancer by reducing the effectiveness of the myeloid-derived suppressor cells. So with that, and I think I'll skip this slide since I've just run out of time, I'll thank the people who did all the work on pancreatic cancer in my lab: Yushi, Yuan Sui, Natalie Lutal and Aubrey Michi, Gaoyang Liang, and Wenbi Li and Morgan Truitt in Ron Evans' lab, particularly Rijun Tian, who's done all the mass spec analysis and helped with Nikki Lytle and Tanish Saray at UCSD, and Andy Lowy, Tim Donahue, Dan Van Hoff, and Erkut Borazansi, our son at Stanford, and Jennifer Cochran's lab. And I particularly want to thank the Collège de France for inviting me to give this series of lectures and for generously supporting my visit to Paris, and particularly Hugh Duté for sponsoring me and being my host. And finally, à bientôt.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.collège-de-france.fr.